All right, 2:11 on WGN. No Patrick Dolan today. We did just chat with Mike Leonard, and now we'll chat with Millie Palmer from Navigant Law. Millie, as always, good to talk to you. How are you doing?
I'm good, John. It's a beautiful day, and summer has officially arrived, it looks like, here in Chicagoland.
Don't jinx us, Millie. What are
well,
you
we'll
doing?
We'll have summer for like a minute, and then winter will be right back.
Millie, I have to ask only because it's the weekend of asking this question, but Cubs or Sox?
Oh, I'm Cubs all the way.
There you go.
I'm an old-time Cubs fan. My dad's dad played, and his brothers played minor league ball in Chicago.
Uh-oh.
And at like the turn of the 1800s to 1900s, and they all became Cubs fans, and it runs in the blood. How about you?
Oh, same. I'm a big Cubs fan. Mike Leonard was a Sox fan, so the last hour was a little uncomfortable, but I'm glad we're on equal and solid footing here now, Millie. Millie, Navigant Law, you guys do estate planning, powers of attorney, basically anything that involves writing down where your stuff should go, who should take care of you or your stuff. That's what you do, right?
That's exactly right. I like to think I help people for a living. I help them get organized, help them not have their life be a mess if bad things happen. And, you know, we're all going to die someday. So
that's true. We may not want to think that, but it is true. One of the things, though, that you remind me pretty frequently, and other estate planning lawyers do too, is it's not only about just planning for when you're dead. It's planning for when something could go wrong, maybe when you or your kids are having an issue medically, that there are some things that you can do that would work with you at Navigant Law that would help you out while you are still alive, too. It's not only about things that help you out when you're dead, because that doesn't do you any good. But there's things that while we're alive that we can do that help us out then, too, right?
Exactly. You know, all of my practice comes down to a line from a Rush song that says, if you choose not to decide, you still have made a choice. And mm-hmm. So if you don't put things in writing on who you want to act on your behalf as agent under medical power of attorney or an agent under a financial power of attorney, Illinois statute has an answer there. And, you know, you could wind up in a pickle and in guardianship court.
I did not expect you to drop a Rush reference, by the way, Millie, I will say. I believe that's Free Will, if I'm not mistaken.
I will choose free will.
There you go. Sorry, I interrupted your thought. So powers of attorney in what couple areas?
So I like medical and a financial, or sometimes people call it a durable. Under Illinois law, it's called the statutory short form power of attorney for property, which is a mouthful, and side note, which is funny. The form is not short, and I don't think there's an existing long form.
Wow. So these two things, who do you choose? I mean, I think if you have a spouse, that makes a lot of sense. If maybe you're getting up in age, can you name a roster of people? Like, I choose this person, but if my spouse is incapacitated, now my oldest son is the power of attorney. Walk us through how we do this and how many people we can name and how it works.
Well, I mean, you can name as many people as you want in successive order. So you cannot, under the statutory form, name two people at a time. Most married couples start with my spouse first, but sometimes that's not appropriate. Like if my spouse has the beginnings of Alzheimer's or some other tragic illness, Maybe that's not the best idea, right? Because you'll just be back in my office a few years later changing it. For power of attorney for healthcare, I like somebody who's nosy, who's bossy, who's willing to say to the healthcare workers, hey, come down the hall. My person looks like they're in distress and they need you in their hospital room. So I like a take charge person. I want someone who's got some time to think about getting you to and from doctor's visits. Somebody who's maybe local, all things considered, local's better than not local. Local to you, right? So, you
That's
know,
interesting. Yeah, because I think that we'd immediately go, It's going to be one of the kids. Let's say your spouse has passed or has an illness. But let's say your three kids don't live in the state. They've moved on. Can you pick like a close friend or someone that you trust? Does it have to be blood?
It does not have to be blood. It can be any person of your choosing. And if you don't have a person, and a lot of people don't, there are agencies out there that will act in this capacity, get to know you and get to know your, all of your wants and wishes. And I think that's really the most important part, is somebody who's willing to know what you would want done if you could speak for yourself clearly and articulately in moments of bad health. So they need to understand it's substituted judgment. What would you say? So anyone who's willing to act in that capacity, but they got to be ready and willing to act. I like a bossy person. You got a niece who's like always telling everyone what to do. She's the gal. She's her.
I know who that is in my family, but I don't feel comfortable saying it out loud. I'll just let this person know they're my power of attorney. I'm not going to tell them I picked them because they're the bossiest. Does that sound right, the way to do it?
That's a good way to do it. But yeah, you could tell them, and you should tell them, I'm counting on you to stand up for me. I'm counting on you to be my advocate. I'm counting on you to make hard decisions. And then if that decision is terminating life support, you know, the old pull the plug, you should tell them in clear terms what you want done, how you want it done, so that, you know, I was raised on guilt, right? You don't want them to feel guilt. You want them to know they're doing what you want when you want it done. You want to understand your wishes.
Well said. Okay, so here's the thing. So I'm going to get a nosy, take jars, willing to dig in person for my power of attorney for medical, locally if they can, talk to them all about it. Do they come to like the appointment with you too, Millie, or do I just need to provide that person with like, provide you with like what, their social number? I don't know. Like, what do I need to bring to the table?
I don't want anyone's social security number. I already pay enough cyber insurance. I don't want anything. If I don't need it, I'm not asking. But I do want to know their name, their phone number, their address, and I want you to authorize me to speak with them if they were to call me, but they don't have to come to any meetings. If they're wondering, if they're acting as agent and they're wondering what that means and how to interpret your wishes, we're happy to advise people that are agents under power of attorney. Most of the time it's agent, the financial side we give more advice on. But, you know, we're happy to help them when they're acting if they need help.
Okay, that's the power of attorney for medical. I'm wondering if that same personality trait or those same personality traits are what you're looking for the power of attorney for property. Who am I picking there?
Yeah, I like them to be interested in your life, and you should trust them. I think that's my first step, is you should really believe they're a trustworthy person, because it's going to work best if you tell them, hey, here's the money I have coming in the door. Here's the bills I pay every month. Here's where I keep my assets, because we're counting on that person to take charge, to help you out financially in the event you need help. You don't have to be incapacitated. But, you know, long before we're incapacitated, hopefully we're old and we need someone to run around and do stuff for us. So, you know, if you have the joy of getting to old age, you might have sharp mental state, but you're just not able to move around like you used to.
Mm-hmm.
In that case, I want somebody who's going to keep an Excel spreadsheet. I mean, John, if you want to flirt with me, talk about Excel spreadsheets, right?
I was just wondering how I was going to go about that. So good.
But no, I want someone organized, someone who's going to keep track of things, who's going to make sound decisions. Even if the decision proves to not be the best in the world in the long run, I want them to try and be a good decision maker, because they're managing possibly your money as you slide off and into unable to do those things for yourself.
Yeah,
so
I think
we need a good egg.
I don't want to be, everyone has a second chance, and there's, I would hate to judge someone for mistakes they made in the past, but I think you do want to look at someone who has done okay financially, not necessarily made the most money, but is smart with money, right? That doesn't...
That's right.
You know,
that's,
I mean, you don't want someone that maybe's had repeated gambling issues or...
Oh, God.
Not that they couldn't be fixed, and they... Or fixed, I shouldn't say it like that. That they've been... I mean, it's a disease, let's be honest. But...
it is. But, you know, you don't want someone who's feeding an addiction. They have enough on their plate as they try and find whatever sobriety they're looking for. You want someone who can focus, who's relatively stable. But most of all, you want someone who, you know, that, I think that goes to capable, trustworthy, and only you know that. Only you know and about who that is and where they're at, right? So if they've licked their problem and they're good now, then okay. But because I don't sit in a chair of judgment. But
yeah.
Also maybe not someone who's got a felon on their,
yeah.
You know. You know, felonies aren't what they used to be, but they still count for something in my world.
They do, Millie. We're getting some questions about this. Let's take a break, though, and let everyone digest for a moment. And if you've got questions for Millie Palmer from Navigant Law, you can call in right now, 312-981-7200. Or next week, Millie, what number can they call you to reach Navigant Law?
Oh, 847-253-8800.
Okay, say that one more time for us.
847-253-8800.
Okay, more with Millie Palmer of Navigant Law, and your questions too next. 236 on WGN, just 24 minutes left here, and we're going to use them wisely. Millie Palmer from Navigant Law, you ready to take some questions?
Ready, willing, and able, John.
All right, very good. Let's lock Millie on in. Yeah, I almost hung up on her there. Thanks, Neil. I appreciate it. That's why I don't hit those buttons. And I'm going to get Gail on the line here because she's from Downers Grove, and that town gets preference because I'm from Downers Grove. Gail, go ahead with your question.
Hi, good afternoon. I am a 20-year widow. I have a condo in Downers Grove that I own outright, and I have no debt, and I live only on Social Security. My question is, do lawyers such as yourself have a payment plan? Because I don't have any savings to pay off. I need to do those three items very quickly. I need to have my condo listed and health care and the other one, power of attorney. But I need it very quickly, but I need to be able to pay.
Over time.
You know, over time.
That's a great question, time. Gail. Yeah.
Of course.
And Millie, you've talked about this in the past, right?
I can't speak for other attorneys, Gail, but for me, I'm happy to do that. You know, the funny thing about that is that over the years, I've never once had a payment plan client not make their payments. And we've built some nice relationships, and I've been honored to do it that way.
Yeah.
I'm there 5 days a week. Well, in the summer, maybe four. I like a little warm weather in the summer, but... But, you know, we're there for year after year. So when clients pay over time, it works out for everyone.
Gail,
what estimate roughly would it cost for a very simple, straightforward will and ownership of my condo outright? I mean, no mortgage, just I paid cash for it.
Interesting.
It's hard to give an estimate, especially over the air. I'll tell you what, though, if you call the office, I'm happy to do an initial consult with no charge. And the Gail that answers the phone at the office can give you a little bit of information on how we price. We typically fix fee price. And you know, it does depend a little bit on what you want done. So if your beneficiaries at death are outright to... you know, it's grown adults who don't have special needs. That's less complicated than going to 20 charities and...
Right.
So it's hard to give an answer to that. But
she can get an answer to it if she calls the office, right?
Yeah, they'll give her an estimate of how pricing works and how it where it starts and all that.
And I imagine you'd help out, too, with Gail, like talking about transfer on death instruments, stuff like that, if that suffices. You know, there's dollar amounts, too, I'm sure, that vary in terms
we
of
would,
estates
yeah.
and all that stuff. So, Gail, call the office, and they're definitely going to chat with you and help you on there. All right, I'm going to go to Alexandra next from Orland Park. Hi, Alexandra.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking the call. And my question deals with the agencies that were mentioned a little bit earlier in the event that one does not have someone to be your power of attorney or your trust successor trustee in the event of a trust. I currently have a will, power of attorney for health or estate finances, and I also have a trust. The will is a pour-over will.
Right, good job.
Thank you. The party that's holding the three roles as power of attorney and trustee mm-hmm. is a family member, and this person I'm still in good contact with. However, there's some partner pressure that's making me think this is not the best role for this party to play any longer.
So they're getting pressure from their partner that you are seeing or hearing about, and now you're wondering and worrying that maybe that person is not the best person to name.
Right. I don't feel it's safe for me to keep that family member in that role.
Well, I'm glad your spidey senses are on. I think that's a good instinct you're having. Are you wondering maybe what those corporate ones were that Millie wondered, or what's your follow-up question then?
Yes. I have a retired nursing friend who has agreed to cover for the health power of attorney.
Great.
I still need the financial power of attorney and then a trustee for the a successor trustee for the trust. I don't know how to go about to find that administrator. I believe they're called corporate trust.
Sure. Well, let's have Alexandra, let's have Millie jump on in here. Millie, your thoughts. First of all, great on Alexandra. I think trust your instincts there, right?
I so proud of you for saying this is something I need to pay attention to, because a lot of times we overlook the signs, and in retrospect, they were all there. So good job trusting your instincts. There's a variety of agencies. There's corporations like Wintrust Private Trust Company or Itasca Bank and Trust. Busey Bank has a trust company. So there's different trust companies that'll act after death. Little side note, that's never us. We would never. I feel it's wholly inappropriate for an attorney to put themselves down as someone's executor or trustee, unless it's like your brother or your husband or, you know.
You're friends with the lawyer. You know them really well,
yeah,
right?
It's
not, yeah.
A personal or familial relationship. But drafting attorney as putting themselves in that role, that strikes me as being a bit of a potential conflict of interest.
You mentioned Busey Bank, Bank of Itasca, Wintrust. These are all people, by the way, we've chatted with here on WGN Radio, names I know and trust.
Yeah, they're good
Could
people.
Alexandra go to her own bank and ask if they've got something like this, too? Like,
she could, but if it's a bigger bank, and I won't name them by name,
uh-huh.
But bigger bank, she may find that they're too... they have too many restrictions, or they're not Illinois law centered.
Okay.
And so it could wind up being a bit more problematic over time.
Well, Busey Bank, we know and love here, so that's a good name as well. They've been in Illinois for like 1870, and they've been on our show many times. So, I imagine she could call the office if she needed a list of a couple other names.
And there's other agencies that'll act as the power of attorney or a backup to power of attorney. So, You know, not every time a corporate trustee won't always take the role as agent under power of attorney. So depending on the bank, you may need somebody else. But yeah. I'm happy to discuss that.
Okay, let's. Are you ready for some rapid fire, Millie? Because we got to fly.
Okay, let's go. Let's
and with
go.
The preface on all this that it depends, and this is just general thoughts, you know, blah, blah, blah. So, 847, my wife and I have separate trust documentation. Should we combine that? Are there advantages?
I'm not a big fan of the joint trust. I'll draft one here and there. I like separate trust. I think it has advantages.
Okay.
So, yeah, every so often I'll find a situation where a joint trust seems to make sense, and I'm always surprised by that.
Okay, so 847, maybe you're all good. 630, when am I determined, I think we're missing a word there, that's okay, to be incapacitated and my power of attorney appointee takes over? Yeah, that's a good question.
That's a great question. Gold standard is a doctor familiar with your care and cognition level who has expertise in the area, has examined you, and has written a letter.
815. Oh, go ahead. Sorry. Is that it?
That's it, yeah.
Okay. 815. We're really doing a lightning round here.
Okay, I'm going faster.
No, you're doing great. 815. I have no children. I have named my niece as executor of my will and trust, but she lives on the West Coast. It would be a burden on her. Does it make sense, and you kind of answered this, to name a lawyer as an executor?
I mean, you could name a lawyer, but maybe naming a corporation would be better. Or make sure your niece has the ability inside the documents to get help from professionals. So she could just point fingers and say yes, no, yes, no, and have local professionals do the work, but she's still in control.
Meaning that she would be able to take money from the estate to pay someone else to help her out?
Sure.
Okay. 815, if my mom does a quit claim deed on me, they say quit. I don't know if it's quit or quick. Will she still get a senior exemption on property taxes? Is that your world, Millie, or not your world?
Yes, it is. It's a quit claim deed, Q-U-I-T, okay. Where you're quitting your claim or releasing it. And generally speaking, if she is not going to be on the title to the property or through a trust on the title to the property, she'll lose her homeowners, potentially, and her senior freeze.
Okay, good to know. 847, condo owner asking about price of will, et cetera, should consider a revocable living trust. Do you agree with that? I mean, and you'd have to know more specifics, right?
More specifics, yes, but a revocable living trust generally is more flexible, and while more expensive upfront, more setup costs, et cetera, is generally less expensive in the long run and works better.
Okay. This one you might need another beat of a second, and I'll give it to you, okay. Millie. This is the one that we had Neil tell you about before. I don't know if this is your world either, but this is from the 847. My significant other bought a house together 6 years ago as tenants in common. So not married, significant other buying a house together. In our will, it states that if one dies, the other gets to live in the house as long as they're able to. He has willed his half to his grandson. I have willed my half to my daughter. Now he wants to dissolve the relationship and make me sell. I don't want to sell. I can't afford to buy him out. Do I have any recourse? This one seems complicated, Millie.
Yeah. I mean, it's relatively complicated because it's sad, John. But really, the tenant in common can bring a suit for partition in front of a judge who would order a sale. Mm. And that I've jumped to the end of the road there, and there's obviously always other factors to consider, like who put in what money, when did they put it in, who, you know, et cetera. But that happens.
That's just the way of that works.
Yeah, I'm sorry to say that is the way it works.
And I don't know life circumstances, and like I'm not telling everyone to get married, but this is one of the blind spots of people that choose not to get married but own property together, right?
That's right. And if they had owned as joint owners, they may have had a different result. If they had owned through trust structure, but again, there's ifs and nuts. Buts won't help them. She is in the situation she's in. And, you know, And I, you know, John, even a married couple, they get divorced, a judge can order that the house be sold. Mm. End of story.
Okay. Minnelli, hang on the line. I'm going to do a couple more questions after the break. We'll go fast through those two. Go slow, though, through your number, 847-253-8800. Did I get that right?
You got that right, 847-253-8800. Yeah.
All right, 312-981-7200 is our number. We got a time for maybe one or two more questions after this. All right, 252 on WGN. Just a few more minutes. We'll get the Indy qualifying event here at the top of the hour. We got a couple more minutes with Millie Palmer, Navigant Law Estate Planning. We always get so many questions when you're on, Millie, and I think that just speaks to how confusing this can be, how much it's needed for all of us to have this in order, and how few of us really probably have it as buttoned up as we should. Would you agree?
I do agree, John. You know, I think people have it in their head, oh, this is relatively simple. I can just do blah, blah, blah. And then they start doing it and start digging in and realize, hey, there's a level of complexity here. Maybe I need a little help.
Yeah, and that help can be found with Millie. So we got more questions. This from the 630. As a small business owner, what documentation should I have in regards to what happens to the business in the event of my passing? And I'm happy to report that your firm knows a lot about this too.
Well, we do. My business partner is a business lawyer. So together, we do succession planning. We ask what happens if the business owner is disabled, hit by a bus, or dead. And, you know, one of the real tricks on that is, like, let's say as a business owner, my partner or I were in the hospital. Well, if we're the sole owners, where's our spouse or our people? They're in the hospital next to us. We need a third party that can come in 30 days, 60 days, 90 days to take over, manage the business, make sure payroll happens, bills are paid, work is pumping along. I mean, it's not going to stop. It needs to keep going, or you won't have anything to come back to if after you recover.
Yeah.
So in that front, John, we look for things like bank authorizations, swing directorships, operating agreements that talk about who's able to act in what circumstances. There's a lot of things.
Right. Yeah, and I just think that obviously you want to have a will and trust for yourself, for your kids, for when you're gone, or for when things are going wrong. But, like, think if you have a business with all those employees. It may not be as personal, but it is. I mean, it is for a lot of people. All those employees, you got to get paid. You want the business to keep going if you're in the hospital. Maybe you don't even tell your spouse, your wife or husband really all that much about how your business works. And now they're the one that has to run it. Like, that's a daunting task for them. And as you said, they're probably in the hospital too. Okay. More questions as we got two more left with less than 2 minutes. So 847, okay. Besides cost, is a will ever better than a trust?
Well, even if you have a trust, you need a will. By law, that's how we roadmap probate if it happens. Additionally, that's how we say who can sign your final tax return. It's important if you're going to disinherit someone that be in the will. It can tell us what you want done with your body, your person after death. There are things that are will things that we want in there.
Okay, so you got to have both. And then also the spillover will? I always mess this up. Pour over
will, but I think we should make spillover the new terminology.
Yes,
I like that better, John.
Yeah, you're not pouring. It just spills automatically. Pouring is an active verb, like you've got to pour it out. This is a will that spills over into your trust automatically by written down, right?
Well, automatically through the possible probate process.
Well, then never mind. Well, then you'd call what you want. I think that we answered this question too with the 312. If you have a will and trust and everything's covered under the trust, what do you do with the will when you pass? It covers a few extra things like the tax return, what to do with the body, disinheriting, and pouring over, right?
Exactly. And the will must be filed. The failure to file a will with the county is a Class 3 felony.
Oh.
File the will.
My gosh, don't do that. That wouldn't be good.
I know. Don't put your person in a bad spot.
Yeah, really.
It's a for willful failure to file within 30 days.
Okay. We got to
I try notice. File it.
Yeah, we got to scoot, Millie. 847-253-8800, 847-253-8800, NavigantLaw.com. Millie, we'll chat again in a couple weeks, okay?
Sounds great, John. Good talking to you. Have a great day.